I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of the Middle East. On the day Stalin liberated the Nazi death camp of Auschwitz in Poland, today Auschwitz is compared with the Gaza Strip for the 15 months of UK-US-EU-sponsored genocide, live-streamed on TikTok, Rumble and X. The Anglo-European United States involvement in that genocide was hardly covert, unlike CIA and MI6 involvement in supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria. Now victorious. Today, an investigation into the CIA is arguably never more pressing, not only because it is 50 years to the day of the creation of the US Senate Church Committee, which exposed the CIA for subversion of democracy all around the world. Thanks to Donald Trump, for a few days at least, the men, women and children of Gaza have slept without the UK-US-EU armed aerial bombardment. And Trump is trying to appoint cabinet members like RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard, who want to rein in the CIA. But his cabinet is Zionist. Within minutes of his inauguration, he ended restrictions on US export of 2,000-pound bombs for Israel. He has picked a US ambassador to the UN who appears to accept literal scripture over UN resolutions on Palestine. And Trump is funded by casino mogul and Israeli-American billionaire Miriam Adelson. Joining me now from Purcellville, Virginia, is Dr. Philip Giraldi, former two-decade CIA military intelligence case officer and executive director of the Council for the National Interest. Dr. Giraldi, thank you so much for coming on. Well, one of the first things Trump did was to end financial foreign aid for 90 days. And then, of course, that excluded Israel, the largest recipient of American aid. What do you think is the point even of the foreign aid executive order that he made on Inauguration Day last week?
Well, there's always, the problem with Donald Trump is that there's always something that contradicts the good news. And in this case, the bad news, of course, is that he has recently also made a decision to eliminate all conditions on the kinds of weapons that Israel will be able to receive from the United States. It'll be able to receive those 2,000-pound bomb busters that have done most of the destruction in Gaza. And he has also turned around and said that the groups of right-wing settlers who have been so disruptive on the West Bank and continue to be disruptive even today will no longer be subject to any kind of sanctions by the United States. So that you get one thing one way and one thing another way. I suspect we're going to have to wait and see what happens.
And watching him in the Oval Office, it was clear that he said, look, I don't expect the ceasefire to last. By the time this is broadcast, my talking to you, it may already have been broken. It has been broken, as you say, in the West Bank, which wasn't part of that agreement. What did you make of his intentions? I know it's very difficult. We're literally investing all of this into one human being. Steve Witkoff, the envoy anyway, is a Zionist, although from what we hear was brilliant in at least stopping the fighting for a few days.
Yeah, well, I think, again, this is a case where there is a developing situation. Donald Trump does not really have much experience in dealing with negotiations at this kind of level. And we have to wonder to what extent his ego is driving the process by him wanting to be remembered as the man who made peace. Now, we will see how that plays out. If he doesn't expect the first 6 weeks to actually bring some kind of settlement and that the Israelis will break the agreement, then it will be interesting to watch to see how he tries to cover himself and concoct a story that makes him look good.
What's your feeling as to why? I mean, clearly, Biden, Blinken, Sullivan, Harris, the names we hopefully will never have to mention again, except in some sort of tribunal, they had this same deal for months. What do you think the deal was about? I mean, did Steve Witkoff, ordered by Trump to say, was he ordered to tell Netanyahu, look, give in? Because it is basically giving in to Palestinian resistance, and we'll back you for destroying the West Bank and the occupied territories? Or was it, we'll arm you to the teeth, maybe even militarily get involved in a war on Iran? Although I should say the Iran envoy, Brian Hook, has been fired as well, who was kind of in charge of transition at State Department. And he was another of these people who went to war on Iran. But mind you, so many of his cabinet, like Rubio, have been historically.
Well, the Biden administration, we have to be honest about, the Biden administration was collaborating with Israel to do what was going on in Gaza and also to increase the temperature and what was going on in Lebanon and with Syria. So they collaborated with them. And we'll have to see to what extent Trump will be a collaborator or whether his reputation will push him in a different direction. It's a very hot situation right at the moment.
And do you know this Brian Hook? He was the previous envoy to Iran, and then he was supposed to be arranging transition for Rubio at the moment. I mean, I suppose I should really ask you about what you think of Waltz and Rubio, really, given your intel background, let alone I think many people know who Marco Rubio is, a person who bizarrely left Cuba under the U.S.-backed Batista regime. I don't think he's a communist, though. He, meanwhile, has always backed hawkish positions right through the your hemisphere and the hemisphere I'm speaking to you from.
Well, I mean, virtually the whole cabinet that Donald Trump has pulled together consists of hardliners. And the hard line is in the Middle East. The hard line, in some cases, is on the Ukraine-Russia issue. It's a little bit softer there. And, of course, it's a very hard line against China. So this is what we can expect, and that's what we should expect. But we have to wonder to what extent Donald Trump will be pushing sometimes in the other direction.
Yeah, he invited Xi Jinping, famously, to the inauguration, or the Wang Yi ended up going there. Yeah, well, I suppose Ukraine is the issue people have most hopes about with regard to peace. How do you think people like Rubio and Waltz are able to make such swift U-turns? Because clearly the Trump policy is not going to be the one that's been advocated by a lot of those cabinet members that he's appointing. Completely out of step with them. And there are some reports that as of even 72 hours of his inauguration, arms exports were being stopped from NATO bases, U.S. bases in Europe to Ukraine, even as Zelensky paraded at the globalist Davos World Economic Forum.
Well, the question has to be to what extent these appointees will be able to go around the president. If they're able to do that, as it was done with Biden, we will see a lot of things happening that are hard to explain in terms of the rhetoric that came out of the campaign from Donald Trump. So, again, this is going to be a work in progress. I would recommend that everybody watch carefully what goes on virtually on a daily basis for the first month, because that will determine to a certain extent the shape of what goes on after that.
Clearly, the confirmation hearings, Rubio appeared to think that he actually used the word leverage on Russia as regards sanctions, as if BRICS didn't exist and as if he didn't understand what happened to Russia after all these sanctions, i.e. the economy is the biggest by PPP, I think, in Europe or something. It's done well out of it. Do you think people like Rubio and the rest of them understand that there's no point in leveraging Putin in any way over Ukraine if they think that's the way to get to some kind of deal?
This is one of the great fictions in Washington, which is that the support for Ukraine basically was about weakening Russia. But the fact is otherwise than that. The so-called leverage has basically made Russia stronger and increased the value of its energy exports. And it basically has come out of this with a somewhat of an alliance with Iran and somewhat of a renewed relationship with China. So who wins here? And unfortunately, people like Rubio don't have the depth of understanding to appreciate what really is coming out of this. It's in America's interest to settle this business in Ukraine and Russia without turning Russia into an enemy.
And the National Security Advisor Waltz, people don't really talk about him that much, a former mayor of some small town in America who worked under John Ashcroft, infamous for reinstituting, you might have to explain what the Palmer raids were on Americans. How do you expect them to impact, actually on home and abroad, these kinds of policies?
Well, you know, the thing is, when these people show up in an international forum, their ignorance is profound. And that was the interesting thing of 4 years of Joe Biden and his regime, was the fact that anytime these people opened up their mouths, and I'm talking about Blinken, and I'm talking about the spokesman in Washington that appeared constantly on American televisions, these people showed their ignorance. And I think we're going to have another round of that. But again, the big question becomes, who's going to be pushing whom? And does Trump, as a result of his first time in office, have any understanding that he didn't have then, and maybe will do some of the right things?
Yeah, people have been criticizing Tulsi Gabbard, his intelligence pick, for U-turning on 702 of the Patriot Act, allowing warrantless wiretapping. In fairness, you don't think that Trump will need to warrantlessly wiretap his entire administration for any conspiracies against him, like the last time around with people like Pompeo?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. I mean, the U.S. government's been doing this ever since George W. Bush, and they've been doing it secretly a lot of the time, and they've been doing it openly by virtue of these allowances that have been written into the laws. So this has been going on since forever. I mean, I respect Tulsi Gabbard because she was one of the few congresswomen who went to Syria to find out what was going on there, to have an informed vote on what was occurring. And she's a very bright woman. And I think that she is not one who is going to be basically allowing whole-scale surveillance of people and stuff like that. I think this will be a kind of a select process for her, which I regret. But this is the way our government works. Our government has become very much, in many aspects, like a police state.
Dr. Philip Giraldi, I'll stop you there. More from the former CIA case officer and current executive director of the Council for the National Interest after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the executive director of the Council for the National Interest, Dr. Philip Giraldi. Dr. Giraldi, you were talking about Tulsi Gabbard. You might have to just explain how the power relations work between the position she has been picked for Trump versus John Ratcliffe at the CIA and National Security Advisor Mike Waltz.
Well, they all have a similar function in that they're basically people who interpret intelligence for the White House. The one who does it most directly will be Tulsi Gabbard, because her position is such that it's has a function in the White House. There is less of a functionality in the two other jobs because they have separate responsibilities. Her job is to interpret the intelligence for those who are the people who will make policy judgments. The other two are basically focused on the organizations that they head, which have a different role. So, you know, there are different voices, but they all are supposed to be singing the same song.
Yeah, I think her position, her predecessor, wrote a report about this program and its power around the world, for which I really liked. I really liked that intelligence report. But, of course, we know that your oligarch-owned media, and let alone the military-industrial complex, don't like Tulsi Gabbard and are smearing her, just as they used to smear Donald Trump, as basically a Russian asset. How much do you think all those senators, congressmen will be believing all these lies about Tulsi Gabbard being a Russian spy, more or less?
I don't think any of them will actually believe it. they're playing a political game in terms of whether they want her there or not for reasons of their own. And most of the people in Congress, as I'm sure all of you in the international community who are well informed, know that Congress is probably one of the most corrupt organizations, political organizations of that type in the entire world.
Yeah, they're pushing back against the Department of Government Efficiency already. Obviously, a lot of money being made somewhere. But of course, Torsi Gabbard, like RFK Jr., who's not responsible specifically for any kind of foreign policy remit, though, are all Zionists. And the push against Iran, given the choices for cabinet positions, does that concern you?
Yeah, it does. It's the one area where I think people should have in addition to Russia, of course, which is the big area where people should have a considerable wake up in terms of the policies that they're pushing and the reasons for the policies that they're pushing. As it turns out, of course, the supporters of Israel in the United States have very deep pockets and lots of money to throw around at politicians. So all of these politicians, as I mentioned before, have basically been corrupted and basically have been bought. And it's critical for them to say the right things about Israel and the right things, which are, of course, the wrong things about Iran.
And you think that despite saying he's all about peace, they will be saying things like, look, Syria went when no one expected it. I think certain Congress people were saying how the intelligence didn't support the fact that Assad would flee so quickly. Similarly, the same could be done about Iran, and the net result will be Trump miring himself in a war, much as previous presidents in recent years have, and go down in history as just another failed US war president.
Well, that's why I say we have to watch the situation almost on a daily basis between now and, say, the end of January. We'll see in terms of some of the decisions that the president makes where it's all going. And this is the time when people like us, who have somewhat of a voice and somewhat of an audience, have got to speak out and got to say, here we are going that way again. And it might be something that Trump is actually sensitive to, and he might push back against his own appointees. That's what I hope to see.
Yeah, but Pezeshkian, the president of Iran, mandated by Ayatollah Khamenei, appear to want detente. They haven't retaliated for Israeli strikes, seemingly saying that it was all about the Gaza ceasefire deal. What would you advise them? I mean, surely, and they're hearing voices in their own country clearly to preemptively attack in these early days of a Trump administration to forestall and instill some kind of fear, because at the moment, everyone will be having Trump's ear and saying, look, Iran's a walkover. They're having problems in their own country, and now's the time to go for it.
Well, I think somebody has to be very clearly making the case that, first of all, Iran is not a walkover. And secondly, there are implications in terms of policies for whole regions and whole parts of the Middle East and also parts of farther into Asia that would be upset and disturbed and basically commit discredit to what the United States is doing. So there is a downside, a big downside, to thinking that, oh yeah, well, Iran is a pushover. Israel wants us to do it. We like Israel. They give us a lot of money. So let's go and do it. The fact is, nothing is ever quite as simple as it seems to the people in Washington. And this has been our deficit for quite some time.
Yeah, the Russian-Iran Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Agreement was made within hours of the inauguration. The timing was set to be near the inauguration day of Pezeshkian being in Moscow with Putin. Do you think they understand? You were talking about those massive trade routes. Do they just not? I mean, you were at the CIA. Surely there's intel about the fact there's a Chandahar corridor from India through to Iran involving the Caspian. Huge, massive trade routes are being organized under the aegis of BRICS. I'm speaking to you from the United Arab Emirates, a member of that grouping, just as Iran is. Do they just not have this information and think that they can... I know Trump said Spain was in BRICS, but do they not understand that the rest of the world is moving very swiftly towards new ways of financial exchange, let alone goods exchange routes?
Well, I mean, the honest to God truth is there are a lot of people in Washington who do understand all these things. And certainly when I hear some of my former colleagues from the intelligence agencies and some other people who are outspoken in the peace movement, basically they do understand all of this and they're quite capable of explaining it. But there is no listening coming from Congress. You know, you could name the congressmen who actually are aware of all these issues and how important they are. You could name them probably on one hand. And this is the tragedy of what's going on in the United States. And, of course, bear in mind that the media in the United States is a big part of the problem. In fact, some people that I know would call it the biggest part of the problem, because what they are doing is they are supporting the standard lines that are coming out of the administration, like everything that Israel does is explained as something else than what it's actually doing. Everything the United States is doing in Ukraine is somehow whitewashed. The relationship with Russia, Russia and Putin are declared to be monsters of various kinds. You know, this goes on and on and on and on. And this is the national media. This is the New York Times, the Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, the major newspapers are criminally involved in this.
Let alone Rupert Murdoch's Fox News, which, of course, Trump apparently watches. It is 50 years since the Church Commission today. The most recent case, CIA's Asif Rahman, you think he acted as a whistleblower? He revealed Israeli plans to attack Iran. And how important... tell me about that case and what you think of it, and how important... Trump getting his hands on some kind of accountability as regards the CIA is going to be in his second term.
Yeah, well, I certainly think Rahman was a whistleblower, and I think he was, I consider most of the whistleblowers we've had in the last, certainly the last 20 years, have been righteous people who are really concerned about what the United States is doing that is damaging the interests of the United States and damaging the futures of ordinary American citizens who are kept in the dark. They're lied to constantly by the administration, and they are essentially being sold a bill of goods where, you know, we have situations like we have natural catastrophes in the United States, and there's no money to help these people, and yet there's $100 billion to send to Ukraine. So something seriously wrong here, and something seriously wrong about the money and the weapons that Israel is getting to kill maybe as many 400,000 Palestinians. So this is awful. So these whistleblowers are saying the right thing, doing the right thing, and I'm all in favor of what they were doing. If Rahman had been able to forestall the Israeli various attacks that have been taking place in the Middle East, in Lebanon, Syria, and potentially Iran, that would have been a good thing.
And just finally, I don't know whether it's a case officer, whether you had security clearance to see them, but Trump has said that the JFK papers, the RFK papers, the MLK papers are going to be released. What impact on American society is it going to have when Americans see the truth about what their government was trying to cover up, even if it's not as bad as some suspect it to be? What do you think the impact will be on the American public when they realize what the so-called deep state does for much beloved figures like John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr.?
Well, I tell you, I mean, the fact that this has been covered up for as long as it's been covered up indicates there's something incredible, something awful in there. And people like myself, who have been concerned about the Israeli role in the American government ever since the 1960s, we nurture the possible theory that Israel was behind the killing of JFK, or at least was knowledgeable that it was going to take place. And that was because Robert F. Kennedy was about to make the Israel lobby register as a foreign agency. So that has never happened since that time. And there was a strong motive. And many of us believe that there is an Israel tie to the deaths of both those men.
Even though the official narrative is that a Palestinian killed Bobby Kennedy, attorney general and candidate for president.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
So that would contradict completely the narrative and turn it upside down. Let alone, of course, Kash Patel, who's up for FBI, and what I don't know what further is going to be revealed. I mean, we already have papers that show the FBI tried to tell Martin Luther King Jr. to kill himself.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of these stories that have yet to surface. I mean, certainly when I was in CIA, there were a lot of things that happened that kind of either went away or were made to disappear and things like that. And these were things that in many cases, people like myself in the intelligence agencies, I mean, we protested and said, no, this is not right. But we were people lower down in the hierarchy. And, you know, the ones who make these decisions are at the top of these organizations, and they're essentially politicians.
Dr. Philip Giraldi, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for the show. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. But until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.